Testing, all right.
You know.
All right, testing, testing. You know how much I use my notes. This is just so I could do something while the worship team is going back to their seats. Because, we've been in a season with a lot of teaching, a lot of good teaching. We had Susan here, and I kind of wish I was one of those guys that could do the radio voice thing, you know, and just repeat things that have been going on. And then there was the time when Nikki said, we strive by resting in God's striving. That was what, within the last month that she said that. That was really good. That's been a thing that's been on my mind. Because it's so easy in our nature to think that our value comes from what we do. We have to strive to somehow satisfy God instead of recognizing that we have no clue what Jesus did, what it took for him to do what he did. He did an amazing thing. And it's kind of a slap in the face, I think, to God when we think that we can bring something to the table other than what he created us to be. I thought it was interesting today, the songs, how God, you know, it's like I wanted to remember that verse of that song and that and add that to my sermon because it like fits. But of course, as we went to the next one, I forgot what we sang in our song. So you'll probably, as you hear me talk, you'll probably say, oh yeah, I think that was that song he's talking about. So I had asked Nikki a couple weeks ago if I could do the second part of, if you remember, she talked about Mephibosheth. Does that ring a bell? Mephibosheth? He was the son of Jonathan. And because of who he was, his relationship, he was honored by King David because of the covenant that Jonathan and David had. And the desire that David had to honor that covenant, Mephibosheth got to be the beneficiary. And I think, wow, that had to be the Old Testament precursor to help us understand what it means to be the beneficiary of a covenant that we can't bring anything to. We can't bring anything to it. But this isn't going to be a teaching per se. This is going to be more of a testimony. Let me see if I can operate this thing. Already no. It's on. Which way do I point it there, Ryan? Oh, Andrew? I just want to... it should be on. I just want to, like, unfade it. No, I don't want that. I faded it with this button. Do I point it at that thing? No, I point it at the computer. I hit this button and it was on. There it is. And then I hit the button and it faded. Okay, I just wanted it to disappear when I wasn't using it. All right. So I'm calling this Mephibosheth Part 2, but it's really not so much a teaching as it's going to be testimony. But we've been talking a lot about identity and how important it is. I mean, I thought, wow, as Esther was up here sharing that word today, I said, wow, amazing. You know, we're so much of what I had thought to say, God is saying, and he said it through her too. It's so important that we know who we are, and Mephibosheth is going to actually kind of show us, I think, what happens when we don't know who we are. It was made clear to him who he was and how important he was. But we're going to see what he did with that and how it really didn't take. So in 2 Samuel, this is just a review, kind of review what Nikki was sharing. In 2 Samuel 4:4, it says, "And so happened that Saul's son Jonathan had a son who was maimed in both feet." And it kind of tells you how. When he was five, the report of Saul and Jonathan, meaning their death, when they were killed in battle, that report came from Jezreel. His nurse picked him up and ran, but in her hurry to get away, she fell, and the boy was maimed. And his name was Mephibosheth. So, I mean, you have to put yourself in a different time. You have to remember what it's like in kingdoms and royalty, and the fact that if one king usurps another, guess what happens to the old king's family? They get destroyed. And it wasn't that long ago we saw that in history with the Tsar. We saw what happens when one kingdom usurps another. We can't have any remnant of the old kingdom. We can't have anybody that might resurrect the old kingdom. So we got to destroy it. So the nurse knew, we got to get out of here. And she saved Mephibosheth. But in the process, she hurts him. And then 2 Samuel 9 is, again, more review of then how Mephibosheth comes into the King David's family. The king asked, this is King David, is there anyone left from the family of Saul to whom I can show some godly kindness? Ziba told the king, and because Ziba is the servant of Mephibosheth's family, Ziba told the king, yes, there is a Jonathan's son, lame in both feet. Notice how that has to come up every time? We have to give him an identity, right? Lame in both feet. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, who was a son of Saul, came before David, he bowed deeply, abasing himself, honoring David. Abasing himself. Kind of a thing you do, I guess, in front of royalty. David spoke his name, Mephibosheth. Yes, sir. Don't be frightened, said David. Let me stop right there. What do you think maybe Mephibosheth thought was going to happen? What'd you call it? Nigerian smile? He might have thought he was going to get executed. You know, I'm sure he was pretty afraid, and so he wanted to make sure and honor David. Don't be frightened, said David. I'd like to do something special for you in memory of your father, Jonathan. To begin with, I'm returning to you all the properties of your grandfather, Saul. Furthermore, from now on, you'll take all your meals at my table. Didn't say special occasions, didn't say when I'm feeling up to it. No, every meal, sit at my table. So what does that mean? How was David treating him? David was treating him as family, saying, you are as important as any other member of my family, and you will sit at my table. Not like a command. I'm sure Mephibosheth might have went on a vacation, or he might have had business to do, and go away for a time. But basically saying, whenever you're in town, this is your table. And then Nikki had her message about the covenant and how that's like what we have in the family of the Lord, you know, in God's kingdom. It's God wanting to honor whoever is related to Jesus and how we're related to Jesus by putting our trust in Him. That's all it takes. Now I want to move on to see what happens next in Mephibosheth's life. So it says in 2 Samuel 6, well, in 15, 2 Samuel 15, you learn about how, if I say this right, Absalom usurped David, decided he's not going to wait for David to give up his reign when it's time. He was going to take it. He's the son of David, and it's time. And he had some bad counsel, I think, if I remember the story right. He had some bad counsel, and so he was going to usurp. And so David's on the run. David's, you know, and it's interesting if you read it. David had come through a lot in his life, and he probably handled that different than many others. He handled it with wisdom and stuff, and so things happen. There's other great stories about this time when a guy threw rocks at him and stuff like that. But anyway, to keep on this story, shortly after David passed the crest of the hill, because he's fleeing Jerusalem, Mephibosheth's steward Ziba met him with a string of pack animals, saddled and loaded with 100 loaves of bread, 100 raisin cakes, 100 baskets of fresh fruit, and a skin of wine. The king said to Ziba, "What's all this?" The donkeys, said Ziba, are for the king's household to ride. The bread and fruit are for the servants to eat, and the wine is for drinking, especially for those overcome by fatigue in the wilderness. Because everybody knew he was fleeing. He needed some, he's given him some resources. And the king said, so where's my master's grandson, Mephibosheth? Where is he? Well, he stayed in Jerusalem, said Ziba. He said, this is the day Israel is going to restore my grandfather's kingdom to me. Everything that belonged to Mephibosheth, said the king, is now yours. Okay, so in other words, we learn, if we study this, that he lied. Ziba lies to David and said, oh, he's going to try to take the throne now. And this uprising is going to, you know, he said might resurrect Saul's reign, you know, through him. And so, you know, he lies. And I don't want to assign motive. I don't know why he did it. But he's conniving, apparently. So David, believing that lie at that moment, says, okay, then everything that I gave Mephibosheth, if you remember, Mephibosheth got everything that was Saul's. Now he says, well, everything I gave Mephibosheth, now it's yours. Because he's actually trusting Ziba to be telling the truth right now. So now we skip ahead to 2 Samuel 19. And this is, okay, Absalom's, that rebellion's been put down. And again, there's a lot of stories in all this that are really interesting and important for different things. But to keep with this story, David is coming back, and Mephibosheth knows David is coming back. Okay? So he's going out to greet him. Huh? Doesn't sound like a guilty man to me. But next, Mephibosheth, grandson of Saul, arrived from Jerusalem to welcome the king. He hadn't combed his hair or trimmed his beard or washed his clothes from the day the king left until the day he returned safe and sound. The king said, why didn't you come with me, Mephibosheth? My master, the king, he said, my servant betrayed me, meaning Ziba. I told him to saddle my donkey so I could ride it and go with the king, for as you know, I am lame. Identity. And then he lied to you about me. But my master, the king, has been like one of God's angels. He knew what was right and did it. Wasn't everyone in my father's house doomed? But you took me in and gave me a place at your table. What more could I ever expect or ask? In other words, I was as good as dead. There was a verse I forgot to put on here back in chapter 4. No, chapter 9. When he's having a conversation with David, and why did you call me? He's like, I am nothing but a stray dog. So Mephibosheth, over and over, gives you an idea of how he's living life. What is the identity he's under? Lame, dead dog, you know, good as a stray dog. Okay. So what more could I ask for? I'm nobody. That's enough, said the king. Say no more. Here's my decision. You and Ziba divide the property between you. Mephibosheth said, oh, just let him have it all. All I care about is that my master, the king, is home safe and sound. Okay. I could probably make this about something else, about how noble he was and his humility and all that. But that's not what this is about, as far as it relates to us as kingdom children. If we don't know who we are, we'll give it all away. If what God has planned for us, David planned, you don't think David, I mean, if you see his attitude, David was like, I want to honor this covenant. Jonathan was so important to me. I want to honor the covenant. I want to give somebody in his family everything that was his. I want them to know I'm still remembering Jonathan. I want them to know that. So when you give somebody a gift and they like, oh, no, you're like, oh, it's not good enough? I mean, what's the problem? And we don't realize that sometimes when somebody does that, it's about how they see themselves. We're unworthy, you know. And as the church, how many times do we know people say, I want to say the phrase right. How do we say it? We're just a sinner saved by grace. Okay, that's how we started. And then immediately, God calls us something else, the Son of God. Immediately after that point, that we're just a sinner saved by grace, we become sons of God. And we can either do everything we can to take that on and understand what that means, or we can keep living in the past and say, well, I'm lame, look at me. Now, you know, give it to him. In our culture, that may not be a big thing. I mean, you can, there'll be Special Olympics for you. There, you can still be important and lame, and you can go through life with computers. You can do everything pretty much in this life if you're lame. But in that day, in that culture of the temple and of the covenant, the old covenant, lame meant there was something wrong with you. And you didn't get to do everything that the pure, the ones without defect, you didn't get the same rights to enter the temple or to do things, to offer sacrifices that the ones that had no defect. So you looked at yourself as there's something wrong with me. I'm less than worthy. And that's what Mephibosheth did. And when it came down to it, he could have at least had half, because it almost sounds like David's just frustrated. You know, fine. You know, Ziba one thing, you another. All I know is you weren't there for me. Fine, you get half your stuff. Of all the stuff I gave you before, you get half, Ziba gets half. Let's just call it good, you know. But I think David's got to be frustrated that Mephibosheth doesn't know who he is and how important he is. That he is basically a son of the king. I would like to fade this, but we'll just leave it up there and you guys can either read it or ignore it. But I wanted to share a little bit of testimony about how God has been helping me with my identity. And it is unique, and I'm not saying, and this isn't a teaching. This isn't so that you relate to God the same way I do. But this is how God has chosen to relate to me. And some of it you may very well relate to. Some of the journey you may say, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember doing that with God. But then some of it may be unique. But I share it because how do we overcome? We share our testimony, right? The blood of the Lamb and the testimony. Because it's the testimony. It's not how much I can teach. Teaching is important. I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is it's not how well I can teach you that's going to help overcome. But it's like my story about how when certain circumstances came up and the word of the Lord got me through that, or the Lord got me through that, is going to maybe give you encouragement and strength when a similar situation happens, right? So it's very important that we have experiences with God. And then in that as we have experiences with God, I would say that we cherish those experiences and we talk about them and we share them, because in there is power. There just is. So one of my first experiences, I've talked about one of my first supernatural experiences being in jail, God holding me in his hand and comforting me. That was one of the first experiences where God did it, and he initiated it, he did it. It was relational in nature. It was showing me how much he was desiring to interact in my life. But it wasn't so much me asking God to do something. One of my first experiences after jail, I'd gotten into my own little one-bedroom house in Rockford, and I was going back to my church, which had completely changed while I was gone, changed leadership, and there was a few leaders there. There was a handful of people I knew, and there was a new group of people. But anyway, on these husband-wife pastors, they like to do this Holy Spirit night, and it was like a Wednesday night. And I'm like, at that point in my life, after years and years of rejecting anything Pentecostal, anything charismatic, I was like, yeah, okay, Lord, I want to see what you want to do. You know, I want whatever you have. That was one of the songs, right? I overcome. right? Wasn't there a song about overcome, being overcome? I want to be overcome, right? That was one of them. Anyway, so I went to one of these Holy Spirit nights, and I was, there's still a part of me kind of poo-pooing, you know, like, you know, so if you come up here, don't worry, we'll have people behind you in case you get slain in the Spirit. And I'm like, yeah, slain in the Spirit. I hate like religious terms, or, you know, terms we use over and over, and it's like, so, but I'll do it. I'll come forward, you know, okay, God, I just want whatever you, and all of a sudden I feel hands, and I feel them laying me on the floor. It's like, okay, well, okay, I accept that. That's fine. Forgive me for all the, what do you call it, well, skepticism, and then when you say a bad word about it, what do you call that? Well, yeah, all those. Poo-pooing, okay. So for 45 minutes, I laid on the floor, and what did I do? I may have said this before. I laughed. I laughed for 45 minutes, nonstop. And it was so healing. I had been through one of the worst parts of my life ever, brought on by myself as a consequence, but one of the worst parts of my life ever. And there was so much that I had bottled up, even though I was processing things and I was getting help and I was doing counseling and all this stuff and I was experiencing help, but I needed more, and God knew it. And I laughed. And it was funny was that it wasn't my laugh, because I know how I laugh, and it kept changing. It'd be 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden it changed to a different laugh. And that would make me laugh more because it sounded so funny. It's just like, wow. And then it changed to a different laugh, and it changed to a different. And I was like, my gosh, Lord, you're so amazing how you can do this, because I never laugh like any of this. And it was so healing. And it was one of the first times where it was kind of like me coming to the Lord and saying, okay, I want whatever you have for me. Stepping up as a son of God, saying, okay, I get it, there's more. And I'm not going to keep identifying as that other thing, because if I do that, I'm not denying that I did that, and I won't deny that I've got to do certain things as a consequence of doing that, but I'm not going to identify. And that's not denial. That's saying, I know who I am in your eyes. Society will call me the other thing, that's fine. And I will deal with that. And I won't give them a lecture or anything. I'll accept that. But I know who God calls me. So I'm going to step forward. And that's what he gave me. That was one of the first things he did. Then it wasn't maybe a year and a half after that, that as my daughter and I were healing and our relationship was getting restored, we went to Elmhurst, to Andrew Womack's school. She was considering going to school there, and they had one of those days where everybody comes to see what the school's about. And so I was kind of expecting, you sit in an auditorium, you hear all these speeches and lectures, or, you know, you hear about what the school's about, but we walked into a worship service, and it was a little... One of the, you know, you see these little office spaces, you know, you see these little plazas set up with business offices. It was like one of those. We walk in, I'm like, this can't be right. I mean, I'm expecting something that looks like a school. We're in a business structure. We had to cram into this room, Becky and I, like, kind of, because it was just all standing room only, everybody standing up. And as soon as we get there, like within 5 minutes, I start worshiping. All of a sudden, I feel this hand on my chest, you know, and it's like, this guy. I'm like, well, I'm just going to ignore him. I assume he's supposed to do that. I'll just keep singing and praising God. And he's standing there with his hand on my chest. And, you know, he's got his eyes closed. And he's praying, and then moves on. And then he says, they said, oh, so then we hear about the school. We get out, we get past worship. We hear about the school. And they said, okay, now it's lunch. We're going to take a lunch break. But our prophet Leland Shores is going to be talking. He has gotten words for many of you. And if you'd like to know if he got a word for you and you'd like to hear it, don't go to lunch. I mean, there's a snack on the table, but don't go out there and eat lunch. Stay here. So I did. And I was like one of the first ones he talked to. He says, you know, when you came in, I got a word for you. Would you like to hear it? Well, yeah. That's why I skip lunch. I mean, I don't usually skip lunch. I haven't missed too many meals in my time. So I was pretty excited that he had a word for me. I was hoping, you know, I'm like one of those, yeah, hope I got a word, you know. And he said, so I heard that you're going to be handling a lot of money. Does that resonate with you at all? Like, yeah. Because I had been told, just before I went to jail, I had been told God is going to restore like 7 or 12-fold what the enemy means to take from your action, you know, from what you did, and the enemy is taking from you now. God wants to restore 7 to 12 times. So I said, yeah, that resonates. Okay, and that was pretty much it. There was some other stuff that, you know, I kind of poo-pooed because I was like, well, maybe you need to become, maybe it's not your daughter, maybe it's you that need to become school. I'm like looking at all my circumstances like, no, I don't think that's for me. Not because I didn't want to, but it's like, no, I don't see that happening. And I've never regretted that, but it's just like, okay, but I heard your word, and I kept it. And what that did, just to keep kind of succinct, that when we went through 19 months of unemployment, I kept thinking of that. And there was days when I literally couldn't wait to go to the mailbox to see if there was some letter from some attorney saying we'd gotten some inheritance, you know, some secret inheritance from some secret admirer of us, you know. I mean, it seemed far-fetched, but it's like, I believe God, and I don't know when this is going to happen. Seems like a good time. We're unemployed. Must be a good time. Well, we haven't seen that come to pass, but I will tell you that that word carried me through some tough times. Then after that, there was the, and I've shared this, so I won't spend a lot of time on this, but there was the theophostic healing that I went through with Linda Wietmeyer and Nikki was there. And God did like at least 5 things where he showed me where he had been during some tragic and hurtful times in my life, what he was thinking of me and what he was saying. And again, that started to go to my identity. Even before I was really walking with him, here's what he was saying to me. He showed me each instance where he was and what he thought of me. You remember I shared the one where I was at vacation Bible school, and he showed me, like my brother had used that to say, oh, you screwed up, you were up there messing up, And then so when I asked, okay, Daddy, what do you say about that event? Where were you? And he shows me that he was in the, you know, I'm up here in Vacation Bible School, and I'm singing, or we're saying Psalms 23. We're reciting it. I don't know, fourth, fifth grade, or third grade, something. And he's in the back. He shows me that he's in the back running with a camera. He's like, that's my son. Look at him. That's my son. You know, I'm still crying about it today. I mean, it's so exciting that that's how he saw me. This might be where I had to go to a different page to write my notes. So there was 5 of those that I got during that time of theophostic healing. And then there's times that in worship here that I had visions, and I think I shared them, but that was so long ago you may not remember. There was one time when God showed me the wedding table. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And the thought was, yeah, we can't wait. We can't wait. He says, you don't have to wait. You can sample right now. You can sample. In other words, go up, grab whatever you want, sample it. This is all for you. This is all for the church. This is all for all my family. Go ahead and sample it. Go ahead. And I thought, wow. And at that time, I had heard that for the church, not for me. I had heard that for us. It's time to sample the goodness of the Lord. It's time to sample from his table. And then, and I'll share this, there was a scene that I still almost recall every Sunday because it's so meaningful to me. But we're worshiping the Lord, and I'm thinking of Jesus. And you know, and there for a while, it was like every time I pictured Jesus, I pictured I wish I could remember his name. The guy that played Aragorn in the Lord of the Rings, was his name? Yeah, Viggo. I'm picturing him as, I'm seeing his face whenever I'm thinking of Jesus because I'm picturing Aragorn the great king, you know? I was like, that's great, Lord, but I kind of want to get something more real, you know? Something that's more you. All of a sudden, I'm on a beach. I'm on a horse, and there's a horse beside me, and I know it's Jesus. And where, you know, you've probably seen it in a movie. There's movies that have scenes like that where two horses are racing down the beach. And he looks back and he's like, hitting my horse in the face. And it's like God is showing me how he wants to play, how he loves to have fun. And it's like I needed that in that season. There's times when I get so serious that I need to be reminded that God is a God of joy. He laughs when people try to make plans against him. He's like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me right now? Henny's words. Are you kidding me right now? And I picture that scene almost every time I'm in church. It's just Jesus racing down the beach with me, just wanting to be with me. Then there was a sozo session that my brother had with me, and again, more healing. But in that session, Well, I'll just tell you, in that session, there was more healing because I needed to forgive people. And, you know, you remember Annie McCaffrey saying this, there's somebody you need to forgive. Is there somebody you need to forgive? Do you need to forgive yourself? Do you need to forgive God? Do you need to forgive other people? And I didn't realize until that sozo that I really held it against my sister who was killed in an auto accident, that she left me, that she abandoned me. And I had to forgive her for that, even though it wasn't her choice. It really wasn't her choice. But to me, she made a decision to stay there and not come back. So I had to forgive her for that. And there was healing that took place that way. And I wish I could remember, and this is like, you know, when I talk about cherishing what God shows you, I wished I had done better in this one area, because in that sozo session, he gave me a sword. But I wish I could remember why that meant so much to me when he did it, when he handed me a sword. And I think it just meant he was giving me his authority, to walk in his authority. Yeah, I think that was it, actually, as I recall. Then there was Annie McCaffrey, the first time she comes to our church. It's like, wow. And she does her thing where's Jesus in the room? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Where's Jesus in the room? Meaning that where you're at in your life and the circumstances of your life, where you're at emotionally, spiritually, you're here. If Jesus is in this room, where do you picture him right now? And there's times where people picture him way over there. Well, how would you get him closer to you? And it's a whole healing thing that she describes. But that was a benchmark day for me. It was to show me how from jail till then, God had been working in my life and how he'd been developing this. We've been developing a relationship. Because where Jesus was at that day was standing behind me, rubbing my back. It was so clear. It's like, thank you, Lord. Wow. Saying, this is what I do. This is who I am to you. I love you. And it reminded me of my brother who used to do that. He used to do all kinds of things, walk on my back and rub me he's like eight years older than me, but when I was a little kid, I remember him doing that to me, and I thought it was so cool. And then another time that she came, she did the jacket thing. Do you remember that? She talked about the club jacket or whatever, the crested jacket that you get when you're in the club or you're, I think that's how she described it. And she said, if anybody wants to come and do the jacket ceremony, you know, she would have a word, you know. And so, you know, I came out after church and came up to her, and she's like, oh, so you want to do the jacket thing? I said, sure. I'd like to. No? I said, and she goes, well, you've already got a jacket on. You've got a jacket on. Your little crest needs to be straightened out a little bit. She said, You're going to be restored to those relationships in places where you'll have significant input, and you will be restored to that place. All these things serve to help me in my identity, to not go back to, because I got to tell you, and this is honest, that sitting in a police station every year, and you other people see you. And you know why you're there. And when they call you, Mr. Smith, come back here. it does a lot to try to pull you back into that old identity. Yeah, I'm just that guy. And it's important to not go back to that. Because what happened? What would happen if I believed I was that guy? I might act like that guy. That would not be good. The world's opinion, or maybe the world's system, would say, so what we're going to do is we're going to shame you so you don't forget. That's not how God's doing it. God's doing it a completely different way. He says, I'm going to build you up and you'll never have to remember. Okay, now I want to share just a couple things that have been even more personal. Because we're family here, right? Last time Jason Heilman was here, he did a thing, and I came on a Saturday, and a few people know, I was kind of in a bad mood that day. It was a Saturday. It was a beautiful day. I wanted to be outside. I wanted to be working my lawn, and why did I do it? Because I have a friend who asked me to come. I had a friend who asked me to come. Anyway, and he said, no obligation. Yeah, I know, no obligation. No, you asked me. But I was afraid nobody would come, and I thought, you know, I want my friend to be encouraged, so I'll come. But that didn't change my attitude. And so I'm listening to Jason, and I got to say, yeah, well, he's a young punk, and I don't think I like what he's saying. I really don't like his teaching. I'm just being honest. I mean, I can be that way. And then, Nikki, he's like, let's do an activation. And I got the same attitude as you. Great. Can't even just sit here and listen. I got to do something. So I said, okay, you know what? I'm here. I'm going to take the time to talk to God. And honestly, I don't remember anything about what he taught. I don't remember any of it. But I remember just saying, okay, God, what do you want to say to me today? And I did not expect this. And again, and I'll share why he does this, at least why I think he does it. But do you guys know Calvin and Hobbes, the cartoon? Okay, I'll show you a picture. That's Calvin and Hobbes. You don't remember seeing those in the comic strip? The little boy is Calvin. So I'm asking God to show me something. And all of a sudden, down this like tunnel, I see Calvin and he's waving at me. I'm like, hey, that's me. So I must be seeing this through God's eyes because that's me. I just knew it was me. You know, just when you're talking with God, he does things. And so I knew, there I am, waving. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, I'm watching myself, Hobbs, wham, knocks me off to the side. And we're rolling, and we're wrestling. And God knew that I needed that. Because there's sometimes that I don't feel like a legitimate man. I don't wrestle well. I haven't. And when people have tried to wrestle with me, slap box, I try to do it, and then all of a sudden something bursts, and I go after them. And I'm mad. I'm not having fun. I'm mad. Because they hit me in the nose or they knock my glasses off and I just go after them like I'm going to kill them. And God, and then I feel so ashamed. It's like, why can't I handle this like other guys do? And so in many ways, I questioned my manhood and God knew. He didn't, you know, like, no, I'll wrestle with you. Wham! And then he showed me a picture of Calvin doing his thing. Because there's a lot of cartoons where he's sitting at a desk and he's like super serious, his hair's all back, and he's like thinking he's solving the world's nuclear problem or something. And Hobbs is just back there like, you know, and he says some off-the-wall remark, you know. And it's just so funny. But what God said to me is like, Roger, I love watching you do your thing. I love it when you do your thing. I just love watching you. It's like, okay. So the last thing I'll share, the last example, just happened Friday night. Henny invited me
You know, no obligation. But if you want to come. Friday night, I'm dead tired. I knew Sherry was tired, but she didn't back me up. I'm like, well, I don't think she'll want to go. I don't think she'll want to go, but anyhow, I'll check. I'll check. Yeah, Thursday you say, hey, tomorrow night, these folks from Bethel are going to be at the Father's house. They're going to be talking about relationships. And I'm like, yeah, sounds really good. And then it occurred to me, hey, this might be one thing that my brother was talking about. He said it was really good. And I went, oh, okay. Yeah, but Sherry will probably not want to go. She's like, yeah, sounds great. Let's go. Oh. Hey, Hattie, we're going. We're going to Father's house. And so a couple named Lorraine and Steve and Lorraine Box came this weekend, and they have a relationship with Pat Vandenberg from days in Vacaville, I guess, from what I glean. And again, I didn't go with the greatest attitude, and we had worship, and I found fault. You know, their drum was way too loud. I mean, they didn't have it. They didn't have the things around it, and we're not that far from it. I'm like, oh, my God, bam, bam, bam. I'm like, so I'm just like, you know, but attitude's a choice. And I said, oh, no, Lord, I want to worship you. Come on. I'm so lame. So it's like, I'm going to worship you. And we got into worship, and then this couple came up, and it was incredible, talking about how to do relationship. And then they snuck in an activation, which I really liked, because they didn't say, now we're going to do an activation. And my X's go up. Ah, don't make me do anything. I'm free. No, they say, so let's, what I'd like you to do is close your eyes. I like closing my eyes. Close your eyes, you know. Ask Daddy how great you are or something, because they were talking about how we were made great, how precious you are, how great you are, how wonderful you are. So I like that too. That's okay. And so I did that, and again, it's funny how it's so clear it's him, because it's so fast. I didn't have time to conjure it up. And how many of you have seen Secondhand Lions? The movie Secondhand Lions. Raise of hands. A few people. I kind of think they tried to play it as though it was this guy growing up that did it, but that was the kid in the story. But in Secondhand Lions, at the end, you find out that the kid in the movie becomes a cartoonist. And he has this whole series called Jasmine and the King or something, Jasmine and something. And so there I am asking God, how precious am I to you? How do you see me today, you know? And there's that face, that lion, and there's me, except I'm seeing it. First I did see his face, you know, that lion, and all of a sudden his jaw drops. I just started laughing. Next thing he does is then he shows us a profile so I can see how far his jaw dropped, because there he, this big lion, and here's me, the little boy, and his jaw goes wham all the way to the floor. And so then I asked God, I said, okay, God, why do you do this? You know, what is this Calvin and Hobbes thing? What is this lion thing? I mean, come on, what is this about? And he says, Roger, I got to lighten you up. And it's not a reprimand. What it is he knows, and I haven't shared this. I think I have shared it before, but I don't know, because when I did that end times thing, God has said to me in the past, I want to show you what's going on. I want you to know what's going on. As it happens, I want you to see what's going on in the realm, because, you know, the enemy's getting ready. I'm getting ready to actually let him do his thing. I promised I would. I said it in Revelation. I said I'm going to let him loose for a season, and then he's done. But I need some people to know what's going to happen. I need them to know, because it says it's going to be a great deception. And it also says that men's hearts will fail them. Men's hearts will fail them for the things that are going to come upon the earth. So he wants some people to know. Now, that doesn't mean we're all going to spend all our time looking at that. And that's why I don't talk about it very much. But I'm always looking at what's going on. And I got to tell you, it can get... ugh. And when you don't have an outlet for that and you don't talk about it, it can get really... ugh. And then the pressures of life. You know, Henny was over at my house delivering a refrigerator I bought yesterday. We moved the refrigerator, And not only is the tile, I figured the tile was a mess. I mean, the rest of my tile's a mess. I got to redo the floor sometime, but the subfloor is obviously got holes in it now. It's like, oh, I don't need this right now. I've already got a roof that's leaking in the, when the wind's from the right direction. The roof leaks and carpets haven't ever been, you know, it's just like, wow, Lord. But that's why. He knows. He knows. And the all the things of life, the work environment, my work environment, it's tough. It's guys. It's a lot of guys doing guys' things. And I was thinking about that today as we were singing. I thought about how I almost feel ashamed when I say bless you when they sneeze, because they always act like that's just the stupidest thing. That's just a common courtesy. Now, I don't even have to be a Christian to say bless you, but everybody like, bleh. And if I sneeze, there's no bless you. That's, I mean, it's a harsh environment. People just, I mean, the things they talk about, I don't want to hear. But it's what it is. And so God's saying, you know what? I'm going to bring lightness to your life. I'm going to bring joy to your life. And that, when you see God drop his jaw, when he's looking at you like, wow, man, you're cool. Okay, let me wrap up. What I would say in wrapping up, let me just. I hope that we all are hearing God in some way like that, very relational. He wants to be relational. I spent so many years, I always forget the number, you know, 30-some years doing Bible study, praying. But it was very much with the intent of trying to please God, not walking in his pleasure, knowing that he's already pleased in me because of what Jesus did, not because of who I am, not because of what I did. I didn't do anything to bring him to that point. He just loved seeing what he created and that Jesus redeemed me for going back to that place that he created. And then he restores. And there was a third word. He gave me those three words just the other Sunday. It was like redeem, restore, and reconcile. Reconcile. He loves those three things. He loves buying back. He loves when what he has bought falls off. He loves to redeem that. He loves to restore it. And then he loves relationships that are reconciled. He doesn't want them to stay broken. He doesn't want them to stay disconnected. He wants to reconcile. He wants us brought back to each other. So to wrap it up, all I would say is that if you don't have anything like this, ask God. He'll give it to you. If you want to know what God thinks of you and how he sees you, and that he will do that, but give him the time. Spend the time with him and then wait. Wait for him to give you the answer. I remember in the sozo. No. It was in the Theophostic. You know, Linda says, okay, ask God what he wants to say. And the immediate thought was, uh-oh, I got to come up with something. Because I've never had too many experiences, so I didn't expect God to say something just because I asked him to tell me something. Just because I asked a question, I didn't think he would give me an immediate answer. So I'm like, uh-oh, got to come up with something. And then I thought, you know what? I'm not. It's time to start being real. If you don't show up and say something, then I'm going to say you didn't say anything. I'll just do that. I've never done that before. I got to put, you know, I usually got to do the song and dance. And I got to be the Christian, so I got to know how to be a Christian. I got to know how to put on the face. And no. Okay, God, what do you say? And I was going to wait. I was going to wait as long as it took. And then if they asked, well, what's he saying? I was, you know, it's like I'm preparing for him not to show up. Well, I'll just say he didn't show up. I don't know. He didn't say anything. But then he said something. Oh, my gosh. You know? So I would just encourage you that if you haven't gone to that level with God where he gives you something that he wants to say to you, ask him to do that. And then when he does, cherish it. Write it down. Maybe tell somebody. You don't have to. You don't have to. I know I didn't think I'd ever tell anybody that he relates to me like Calvin and Hobbes, or that he relates to me like a lion, like a cartoon lion. I didn't think I'd share that. But guess what? If it helps you, I want to help you. I want to encourage you that God can do a million things. And he knows what you need, and he knows what you need to hear. And I would just encourage you to go to him and ask. So with that, I'm done. Thanks.